Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You've been on this before.
Hi.
Hi.
I have been. Welcome, Sam. Welcome to the yard.
Thanks very much. So for those listening, well, who no one else would be consuming this if they weren't listening, welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. I'm here today in an outdoor setting with Phil McGovern. Hello.
Hello. We're sweating.
We are. We decided to move outside because it's, if you tune into the video, you'll see it's quite a nice view and there's some cars cruising past and whatnot, but it seems to be significantly hotter than the room we were going to use inside.
So. Yeah, we falsely assumed that, didn't we? Completely the wrong way around.
So if we melt halfway through, apologies. Can you tell, you have been on the podcast before, so yeah. And we covered a bit of your journey and whatnot, but can you tell the audience just a little bit about sort of who you are, what you do, where we are?
Oh, crikey. So, name's Phil McGovern, which you've very kindly introduced me as, which is ace. Perfect start. I am one of the founders of Caffeine and Machine, which is a dysfunctional youth centre for the automotive and petrolhead community.
Mm.
We are knocking on the door of 5 years old as an operational business. We are but 2 weeks away from opening up our new location, which is wild to even consider that we made this one work 5 years in is crazy.
Yeah.
To consider opening up a second one, sounds like a rod for my own back, but we're going to go get it. It sounds really exciting. And look, it's been a really interesting journey. It started as this kind of, how do I put a ring fence up around the community and provide a playground and a home and a place for people to hang out? Somewhere where inclusion was key to the success of what Caffeine and Machine was all about. You know, you and I have both been in the car industry long enough. It's quite toxic. It's quite cliquey. The challenge was to try and put on a show every single day. So we're open from 9 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, 7 days a week. And the concept was to make everybody welcome at every single stage.
And you actually got that written on the side of the building.
Yeah. It's kind of stuck in our manifesto. Like, I don't care your vibe, your jam, your love affair, as long as you do it with passion.
Yeah.
You are welcome.
Yeah, 100%. Because you do, it's so easy to sort of slip into whatever you're into. Like my thing might be, I don't know, Porsches or something. And then be like, I'm a Porsche guy. I'm not really interested in anything else. And like, bugger off, I only want to go to Porsche stuff. But that is actually really boring.
Like, it becomes incredibly insular, doesn't it? And you know, I've noticed it over the years that if you're a love affair of a brand, it's quite welcoming and open, and then you get down to a product level and it gets a bit weirder, and then you get to derivative of product level and it's even weirder. And yeah, look, we both share the same passion. We're both Porsche heads, right? My love affair started in Volkswagens, which is why we do an air-cooled night, and I hope to continue doing air-cooled nights until this business no longer exists. My passion set is right there. But it doesn't negate my love affair of everything from that bright yellow Honda Integra to the Celica, to the RX-7, to your big wagon. You know, I like all of it because I'm drawing inspiration from everywhere.
Yeah.
And at the core of it is the people, Sam, you know that.
It's always people.
And our love affairs chop and change. And there's another thing that we like to flex. We like our slogans in this place, and it's get in where you fit in. it's that, you know, find the weirdness in the wonderfulness and meet a stranger that becomes a friend, because that's all that this place ever fosters.
Find
the lonely guy or gal and go and say hi, because they'll share something with you.
And everything, pretty much everything that seems to have rolled up so far, you can tell that someone's like keen on it.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it's not, no one's turned up in like a blancmange car that they don't care about. They care about it.
Yeah.
And we've had quite a variety, whilst I've been sitting here for 40 minutes or so.
And some people, it's a vector. It's a transport device. You know, you might find photographers, videographers, music producers that are complete petrol heads, but they love creating the content and the assets that support the industry that we love.
Mm.
And they might just roll around in something quite basic. You know, Jim, who's our sign writer, who's an incredibly talented, deep, deep petrol head, but all he cares about in life is his Mark IV Golf GTI.
Yeah.
That's like literally all he cares about. And it's not the most perfect thing, and it's wonderful for it.
Well, that's it. And you just, yeah, exactly. It's the people. And the longer I'm in it, the less I care about cars.
Yeah. It's an age thing as well.
Yeah.
Like, I can see what you're doing. I've seen you rolling around in these things. Like, this is cool.
It does the job. I mean, it does the job very nicely.
Yeah.
But so we've got my E63s nicely rolled up. It's actually in SUV mode at the moment, so I can park up.
Access up on the hill.
So if we wind back, we last did a podcast in... I wrote down.
Long time ago.
March 2020.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you want to know about how Caffeine Machine came about and the idea and Phil's sort of background and a bit of Dan's as well, go listen to that podcast.
Yeah.
I think it was number 38. We're now on number 180.
Insane. You should be applauded for that, Sam.
Which is hilarious. Hmm. But way back then, I'm trying to think. Had you been open for that long at that point?
No. So we opened October 2018, and then the world shut for us, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So we popped back open. Yeah. Thanks. Like, everyone seems to have forgotten about that. The amount of people I see coming out of bathrooms having not washed their hands. It's like, did we not learn a thing? And yeah, we reopened again. It was July, I think, wasn't it? July the 10th the 7th, somewhere in there. The world reopened. So yeah, when we caught up, we were just getting back into the swing of things. I believe we recorded in one of the bedrooms, which we just opened.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't got to the point of opening. Because we foolishly opened what I've described as a skateboard. So we pushed a skateboard into market. Like, conceptually, we had the idea. We had a very, very limited number of staff. We didn't have a clothing line. We didn't have the bedrooms. We didn't really have an event structure.
Yeah.
We were just opening and seeing where it would take us. So yeah, by the time that we caught up, we were just getting into our stride of beginning to deliver on the brand and the product.
Yeah, and you'd started having some nights.
Yeah.
I think you'd possibly been doing this for a while by that point.
Yeah.
One of which was, is it Daikoku?
So Daikoku is actually happening tonight.
I'm pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, and again, that goes back to that, how do we create an inclusive pattern?
Yeah.
So we describe them as our Cult of Machine Wednesdays. So Cult Machine is the overarching ethos for us. It's the, if you're in the cult, you get it. And if you come to Caffeine and Machine, thank you very much. But many people who don't come to Caffeine and Machine don't even know about Caffeine and Machine. I'd put them in the Cult of Machine because it's that love affair, petrol hedonism. So yeah, first Wednesday of every month is Daikoku. And then second Wednesday of every month is a theme, third, fourth. And then we occasionally drop these twisters in on the fifth. But the idea is to create a natural heartbeat that people can diarize and catch up with their mates.
Yeah.
And Daikoku's amazing. It's probably the most diverse community that we have. The JDM community. By the way, that is a Case quad track in the background.
Apologies for those listening if you get a bit of...
Someone is preparing our audio. Food. Local farmer, arable farmer, yeah. But the Daikoku night's absolutely amazing. And it's the financial scale that's involved in it's incredible. Because you have million-pound JDM cars, you know, really? all the way down to...
What is a million-pound JDM?
Let's talk kind of classic Toyota, kind of James Bond-style Toyota.
Yeah.
You've got these absolutely bonkers kind of GTR brigade now, R34s, Nismo 400s, getting really expensive.
Yeah. They're really niche. Like, they only made a few in Japan. Yeah.
Cosmos. You know, there's some really cool stuff. You know, they're not in the million, but they're all in that broad spectrum that kind of goes all the way down to the 1,500 quid Celica.
It's really funny how that... It's not... it's not the right word, but how that's evolved 100% over my lifetime, and also the sort of time I've been into cars. I sort of probably started when I was properly about 20, something like that. And all of those kind of cars were sort of there as like for the young people, I'd say, at that sort of time.
They were super accessible, weren't they?
And then you just see them as they were the sort of cheap stuff. Obviously, that was probably the niche ones that you didn't know about. And then now everyone's like, I want those cars from my childhood.
Yeah, try and find an R34 GTR and get changed from 100 grand.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane.
I saw a brilliant meme, and it was from the first Fast and the Furious. And you know that bit where, what's his name? Walker.
Is it a bit where, what's the retail on that, bro?
What's the retail on that? And it was it 355?
Yeah.
And now you look at it and the Supra's worth like $200,000 and the Ferrari's worth 100.
Yeah, it's gone upside down. It's crazy. And so that Daikoku brings that diversity. And then you mix in the motorbikes, of which, you know, we've never been a motorbike venue. We're a machine venue. But you see that spread. Mm. It's wild. And it's such an engaging night. And they're super passionate and they're great with feedback. And they're incredibly accommodating of that. We live day by day by making mistakes, and we do it openly in front of people. It's actually quite a scary proposition, making mistakes in front of people consistently.
Yeah.
But you know, we're in the service industry. We're putting parties on. There's always going to be a mistake somewhere, and it's how you deal with it. And the learning that we've gone through is we've grown from like a 5-man team with 2 business directors to what is about to breach 100 people and then keep going.
Whoa.
It's crazy.
That is crazy.
And keeping on top of it.
That's cool.
It's nuts. It's nuts.
Well done.
Well, without it, right, it doesn't work. So, you know, and you've got, we've kind of become this, you know, the sentiment of if you want to get into Hollywood and you want to be an actor, you go and work in a Hollywood cafe. There's this kind of, if you want to get in the car scene and you want to find yourself working at Tuttle or ProDrive or Jaguar Land Rover or Aston, like, they're coming to work here.
Yeah.
And they're beginning to pick up on who's in the yard. You know, young graduate design student behind the bar realizes that he's serving a coffee to Miles Nirenberger at Aston Martin, and they're like, you two need to talk.
Yeah.
So there's this
yeah.
really lovely kind of, we're handing off to the community back. So it feels cyclical and circular, sorry. It's really, really intriguing. Wholesome. Lovely.
That is super cool. I wish I lived... Like, if I lived closer, I'm quite far away at the moment. If I lived closer to here, I'd 100% just, like, sneak in on the way.
Yeah.
Because, like, why not? And then also, you see stuff, you talk to people.
Yeah. And that's one of our biggest challenges. You've referred to the sneak in bit. You know, people think we're a ticketed venue consistently, and we're absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, we're ticketed on Wednesday nights. You guarantee your ticket on a Friday, just because we don't want people to be traveling 2.5 hours and get turned away. But again, like, who knew?
That's crazy.
Like, how
it?
Ridiculous that we have to operate like that. But again, you know, we're a bumpy community. We're not liked by everyone.
Yeah.
You know, the petrolhead community is a disliked community in general. So being able to protect our business is the only thing that we can, it's the only way we can operate to ensure our survival, the business's survival as a whole, but also show that as a community, we're actually a bunch of really good people.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, I don't know if it's underappreciated, but I think that is, you're doing so much for the wider community by being how you are. About, like, you know, don't be a dick. Like, we're not here to go and speed off down the road. Like, come, appreciate, everyone's welcome. Yeah.
It's a hard one to do when people love to peacock, though, right?
I know, especially cars as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a, you know, it's a thing in the scene, this kind of belief that you've got to peacock and you've got to show off. You know, the best bit about driving is being behind the wheel. It's not watching someone go arsing down the road far too fast and putting a lot of people in danger, right?
Yeah.
So this kind of don't be a dick thing is part of our social governance. It's the way that we want to run our business. And we try and project it far and wide. But if I was to kind of like get too distracted in helping all of these other events in terms of the way that we have our ban list, You know, again, we're lucky that the odd process of having to ticket has provided us the ability to know who's coming.
Yeah.
So if you do act a fool as you're leaving, like, you gave us your phone number.
Yeah.
So we can give you a call and we can educate you and kind of say, look, you know, you don't pee in your own front garden. We built it for the community. We're running it for the community. So look after it.
Yeah, I don't understand why people go to an event that you know someone's put a lot of effort in and you're like, this is a really cool place. And then on the street, yeah, outside the front door, I don't know what this happens here, but it happens at lots of events.
Yeah.
Like clutch dumps, burnouts, wheelies down the street, 100-mile-an-hour flybys. You know, like, this is a family event. People have got kids. Like,
yeah, it still happens.
I get it as the younger version of me.
Yeah.
Kind of wanted to do that stuff.
Yeah, we all did.
And you're like, because I get it.
I'm no saint. None of us are. But I think I did some research ages ago. I think there's a better part of 500,000 miles of tarmac in this country.
Yeah.
Like, you can...
There's a time and a place.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, not when there's crowds.
No, go find it. Go find somewhere that you know that you can enjoy. And if not, go find a track or a drift circuit,
yeah,
or pop down to Santa Pod. You know, these things, again, their survival is predicated on your involvement.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to go cock around on the street, all you're doing is inhibiting Santa Pod's ability to survive.
Yeah.
So support...
Exactly. And if you want to go fast, go to a track.
Well, Germany's not that far away.
Or Germany. Germany, yeah, just go to Germany. But like, if you really want to push the limits of a car,
yeah,
go to a track. And a friend of mine spectacularly sent it off into the gravel this week. but that's better than going off the road.
Yeah, or look, or find space in sim racing. Like, as I've got a little bit older and I've realised, A, I can't afford to do track days and I can't afford to go racing like I used to. You know, the concept of esports has just really soaked into my blood.
Have you still got a sim here?
We got it in the back room as a staff thing.
Yeah.
It's currently in mid transition, but we're working really hard with so we're very lucky. This area, Warwickshire, Oxfordshire area, not only is it kind of motorbike, car, track world, the gaming community is really thick and diverse here as well. So Leamington Spa is like the home to Codemasters, which is now owned by Electronic Arts. It's home to Playground Games, which is the creator of Forza.
Mm.
So all the people that make the games,
that's cool.
They all live and work in and around here. So yeah, I'm desperately keen to try and launch something that sits in and around the esport world, so we can, because it's great for mental health. You know, finding that time to zone out, put your headphones on, and go racing. You meet new people. But what I want to do is somehow funnel that into a live activation in the yard, so you can meet the people that you race online. I think it's hugely powerful, but again, it's a safe space because you can bin it lap after lap.
I love playing on the sim.
Yeah,
it's actually the only gaming I do at the moment of any sort, and I don't get to very much. Young kid, and you're like half an hour.
Yeah,
I know the what car.
Four and a half
track.
Hours later, still there.
Yeah, I can. You know, you just. You can either try and be tidy and go quick, or you can just be as messy as you like, or try and enter a corner backwards, whatever. And it's fun.
What's your platform of choice?
At the moment, I play a lot of Gran Turismo.
Yeah.
It's that or Assetto Corsa or Assetto Corsa competition.
Yeah.
Just because of how my sim rig
is
set up.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of ACC. Have been since it first came out.
I think that's the best... That's the best racing style one. I just wish there were more cars in AC. ACC feels better to me than the normal one.
Yeah. But there's just way more cars in ACC.
But there's only GT3
cars.
And you're like, well, I want to drive some road cars and some whatever.
Yeah.
I've never driven a Evo whatever Tommy Mackin edition. Oh, okay. I can play that in Gran Turismo.
Yeah.
And I can get a feeling for probably what it's like to drive.
That's so close. They're so close. I know you and I both have experienced times in Radicals, right?
Yeah.
And I was very kindly invited to drive a Radical recently at Silverstone. I think it was the SR10.
Oh, yeah, nice, nice.
Bat shit.
It's pretty mental.
Yeah, shout out to the guys at Radical. That was amazing. But running up to it, I did four training sessions on a sim on Assetto Corsa in a Radical. And by the time I sat in the real car, it was freakishly similar. Like, it did things that I absolutely expected it would.
Yeah.
So yeah, Sims are great.
It's really good psychological prep.
Yeah.
He's like, I was chatting to a driver coach, a guy called Colin Hoad. I don't think you've come across him.
Yeah.
Cat driver training. And we were talking about racing and driving and whatever. And I was saying, I find it really difficult when I get on track to get up to speed quickly.
Yeah.
Because you don't have that much time and it costs loads of money. So you kind of want to, you really want to be like on it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And he flipped back to me and was like, so what sort of prep do you do for when you go on track? And I was like, what? Like turn up, get in the car. He's like, no, do you look at the track map? Do you watch any videos? Do you run through like before you get in the car?
Yeah.
Corner one, fifth, slight lift. Corner two, like if you've been there before.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't do that. He's like, hmm.
See, I have to. I bear so much anxiety before I get anywhere near it. Like, I have to sit and consume every single potential onboard video I can, from pro drivers to club racers.
That's how you should do it.
Yeah.
I suddenly was like, shit, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Why am I not doing this?
Yeah, because psychologically, you're like, I can do this in fifth, because if he can, I can. Or she. Like,
yeah.
Some of the onboard videos are crazy.
Or at least it's doable. You know, it's doable, like-ish. So you're not going to go around in third.
No.
And then after, you'll get an idea and you'll get up to much pace much quicker. And then on a sim, you can test it and you can be like, it is a bit different in real life, but...
Isn't it?
You can be like, well, okay, it's not sixth.
The fear factor is incredible in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't get any of the Gs, really, and the weight and the gravity that is all associated with going around a corner fast.
No,
and
no.
The sore arms.
Neck.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That ride was bonkers.
It's good. It's good fun. It's good fun. On the way here...
Yeah.
I guess this is probably part of the... I think last time, one of the things we talked about is you didn't realize you were going to have to spend so much time talking to, I don't know, the council...
No.
There's now speed camera signs.
Yeah. But
I don't want to publicly.
No.
I don't feel like they're speed cameras.
No. So what they've done is so there's a plinth kind of 500 yards down on the right hand side. So we're big supporters of this. Like anything and everything we can do to show that we're doing the right thing. So if the community comes in thick and fast and says speeding's an issue and it's generated by caffeine and machine, we have to kind of take it with a little bit of. What's the word I'm looking for? It exists whether we're here or not.
Yeah. This is their opinion, but also...
Yeah, but like I empathize, I hear you. We'll do everything we can. So let's put speed cameras on the road because I don't mind.
Yeah.
Do you? And so we worked with highways and we worked with the council and we're very, very close to the police force. We do everything we can because we want to protect those roads because that's where we're going to have some fun. But there are no fixed cameras on this road. There is just a spot where one might appear.
Okay.
And on account of that, they have to put the signs up.
Yeah.
Look, it's a 50-mile-an-hour road. It's a fast 50-mile-an-hour road. You know, we've got the data because we do a load of traffic surveys to understand. Because we can't qualify it and quantify it in a really nice kind of measured argument back to anyone unless we've got the data points to support it. So we went and found those data points.
And you went out, you got the data... That in itself says so much to the people you're talking to.
Yeah, we found some weird things, like the road's never busier than when we're shut. Like, it's really weird. And, you know, we sit between one of the biggest tourist towns in the country and one of the biggest, here he is again.
Tractor's back.
Yeah, one of the biggest kind of commercial towns in Banbury, right? So you've got Banbury and you've got Stratford-upon-Avon, and this is the Link Road. So of course it's going to be busy.
Yeah, and you've got,
you know, 40,000 Jaguar Land Rover Aston Martin employees that live over there, and, you know, you've just got a lot of people.
Yeah.
Thank God we haven't gone 20 miles an hour like London. Like, I went to London at the weekend. Good Lord, dude. How do you deal with that?
What? So I had to do a speed awareness course recently. It was a good course. The reason I got done, this is the first speeding offence I've ever had.
Hmm.
And it was a rolling like 70 into a 50 into a 40. All dual carriageway up to a big roundabout. And I was done like slightly over the 40 sort of limit in the 40 section.
Yep.
What I'd done is just lifted off. Anyway, I'm not defending it. Don't speed. On the course, they did this bit at the beginning. I've definitely tangented off, but I thought it was quite interesting. And they got everyone in my sort of little group, eight people or something.
Yeah.
They showed us some video clips and they said, write down what the speed limits are in all these places.
Yes.
And I reckon 75% of people haven't got a clue.
No. The only obvious one that I've got etched into the back of my brain is if there's lampposts, it's 30.
Yeah, like unless it says 50, 40, etc.
Yeah, and people don't grasp that national speed limit varies between single lane and two. They don't grasp it varies between weight of vehicle. the amount of axles you've got on your vehicle.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know if you have basically a heavy vehicle, it's like 10 miles an hour, vaguely slower, et cetera, et cetera. Because that must lead into a road rage situation, I guess, where if you're following like a tractor and you're like, why, or a lorry, and you're like, why are you going 50 in a 60?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, the speed limit is 50 limit. For them. They're not being annoying.
That.
I thought that was particularly interesting. Right, let's talk about the new place.
Yes.
Are there two new places? I know this is like diverging a little bit, but I feel like there are two.
So I've got to be very conscious what I say.
Okay, so there's only one.
Purely, yes.
Right, okay, there's one.
Yeah, look, go back to what we said here about when we opened and trying to engage and make a community understand that all we're really doing is trying to save local economics at the core of all of it. Countryside pubs are sliding away.
Yeah.
Places to hang out are disappearing. So, you know, when we look at country pubs as an opportunity for us, we're trying to reinvigorate, we're trying to put economy back into the local towns. They think that we're a nuisance. So that's Lynn. She is one of my absolute rock stars on the right there. So, you know, when we come to kind of say that we're arriving, we're coming into town, people get upset and a bit stressed out.
Yeah.
So we keep that a little bit quiet because we just want to protect our ability to open. So there is formally one more.
Yeah, the Bowl.
The Bowl, yeah. So I spent a lot of time trying to think about names and then realized one afternoon I was staring at the Millbrook High Speed Bowl. So I was like, let's call it the Bowl.
And that's a significant automotive feature of the area.
Yeah, look, I spend a lot of time trying to figure out where the best spots are to go.
Yeah.
You know, the concept of being here, it was either going to be Warwickshire to some extent, or I wanted to do kind of Southern California, or I wanted to do Pacific Northwest.
We spoke
about this. And it's culture, it's knowing where the car community sits. So when we looked at Bedford, I was conscious of everything from UTAC to Red Bull to all of the teams that sort of the businesses that filter into Formula One teams, to BSA auctions, to Mercedes-Benz, VW Audi Group. They're all in and around that region, right?
Yeah.
They're all kind of Milton Keynes-y, Bedford kind of Amped Hill.
Yeah, not far from a bunch of circuits, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and it's super accessible into London. You know, it's a very different proposition for you to come here versus you to go to the Bowl. So it opens up a whole set of new chimney pots. So we found this place. Oddly, we found it 3 years ago now, give or take. And it was a failed purchase back then. Like, we got so close and we lost it. The chairman of the company that owned it was a big pub chain that owned it. They reneged on it. But thankfully, they came back to the table and we found ourselves going into negotiation. When was it now? It's all happened in an absolute whirlwind, Sam. Let's just say within the last 6 months, it's gone from, oh shit, it's back on the table, to now being the better part of nine days away? It's the 6th, we open on the 14th. It's just bonkers. It's really, really exciting. Whole new world, whole new way of trying to understand the local area, getting to know new people, getting to understand how the community is going to accept us. So far, touch wood, hand on heart, it's been overwhelmingly supportive.
That's awesome.
You know, the Facebook group pages that are bobbing in and around the local area, to the mayor, to the district councillors, to the police and crime commissioner, everyone is kind of saying, we really are excited about you coming, which is a complete flip to the pain we had in the other one, which is Derbyshire, which is it's a really difficult conversation, and we're having to trade that as a pub, because we've really struggled to get it through.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it? Like, the fact at all that people are talking about you coming to an area, that's mental in itself. Like, just as a thing, you're like, I'm just trying to open basically a venue. Like,
yeah,
that's cool. But like, it's got to this point where everyone's like, yeah, we like you. Most people.
I just can't get my head around the fact that people are talking about it. That's crazy. Kind of that imposter vibe again. It's really? Like, I can't get my head around this. Like, we had a guy recently, and I'm gonna name him. His name is Troy, and he's amazing. He'd flown in from LA just to come and stay at Cafe in a Machine. I'm like, you are kidding me.
That's super cool.
And he's like, no, man.
Have you got a little... No, it's not really a thing. A little bored of furthest distant travel, but that almost makes it.
I'd like to put an atlas thing, up and do a pin in the map.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because again, the minute, and it's weird because it's just the way that I think, the minute you elevate someone.
Yeah, I agree. Because someone will try and Oh, hello.
I love a Bipu Lexus, man. So slammed, slammed, laid out Lexus LS400.
Do you ever get the ones with the, I don't know what they're called, the massive exhaust? You might start like that, but with a big...
Bossazooka.
Bossazooka.
Yeah, they come.
You get some of them?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One thing I've never seen in the yard is actually a Bossazooka motorbike.
People have motorbikes like that?
Yeah.
Jeez, oh.
It's a thing. It's an absolute thing. Even down to like Phil Morrison's Lambo occasionally rocks
up on it.
And that's got super Jap flair, just because that's what he takes his style inspiration
from.
Yeah,
that is super cool.
Yeah.
And then you get the full other end of the spectrum. You get your Gordon Murray T50 or whatever
they
cruising
were here,
in.
Here last night.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The Bowl.
Yeah.
Is the plan for a similar sort of establishment to here?
Yeah, so look, the Bowl kind of culturally will be the same. There'll be a creative difference a little bit. In general, we always knew that each location would pull for its own community and it would have its own flavour. It's going to be within reason cookie cutter. But we want to use it as an opportunity to try different things, approach things in a slightly different way, potentially deliver a different menu. Because again, people come in and they go, "Oh, the menu's a bit basic and a bit simple." And it's like, well, we have to serve nearly 1,500 people in a day.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So when you start to look at these incredible menus that some places offer, it's just like it's unfeasible. Like the wastage is astronomical. So it's a bit smaller. But there's opportunities to have fun down there. And again, a whole new world. Like, I keep sitting in and around local towns and villages. I have to go and feel it and vibe it. So if you see me sat on the side of the road, I'm not being weird. I'm just watching.
or counting traffic.
Which could be weird in itself. But yeah, it's understanding, you know, who's coming in. You know, how do we profile the car park? How do we make sure that slam cars can make in if there is a high prevalence of them in and around Bedfordshire?
Can they get in here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I tested it early days with my van. So my old 68 Westie was slammed.
Super low.
You know, we've stopped to have to communicate people now to say, come in, turn in right, not turn in left. If you're super slammed and you're coming in left.
Okay, yeah.
It's a bit
work.
Harder than coming in right. But yeah, it's fine. The biggest issue is coming across the Brickyard 400 lip.
Okay.
But thankfully, most people deal with it.
Yeah, they make it.
Air's become a thing. Static's not that. You know, if you're static, you're going to accept you're going to whack everywhere.
Yeah.
Because England is England.
Do most people, I'm not in the scene, do lots of people mainly run air now, or do some people just run super low and, you know, it is what it is?
I think air's becoming, as it gets more capable of delivering a dynamic driving experience, I mean, you've got air in that, right? In your Mercedes.
It's lifted at the moment.
Yeah, so look, air is getting better and better and better. Static is still a thing. I'm static on my big Mercedes. I'm guessing that Nissan down there is static just because I can't see it bobbing and lifting up and down.
Yeah.
Static still gives you that more dynamic thing. You won't see it in drift cars. You'll see it in scene cars. It's very much a thing that sits in the German world. So yeah. Audis, Mercs. BMWs go for a bag, VWs.
I do like
JDM
it.
Guys love a coil, and they love like getting down, like nasty low, painfully low sometimes. You'll hear them tonight. You'll hear them scraping.
I'm really intrigued as to
but scrape with pride,
how,
right?
How it's going to be. One of the things you've done is you have this series called "I Love You, Man."
Yeah.
What's this about? Talk to me.
So, it's only come to the fore recently because we've recently taken on a we've. Because we're going from this kind of founder-led loosey-goosey, fun, interesting business to something that we would like to try and scale.
Yeah.
We've brought a managing director in, a guy called Matthew Finch. And Matt grabbed him one afternoon and just said, what is I Love You Man all about? And I had to go away and think about it. And I realized that the brand is probably underpinned by it to some extent. And it traces all the way back to the Middle East, where all of this kind of ideation for Caffeine and Machine started to materialize. And I found myself a bit lonely. I was a fully functioning alcoholic. There was a lot of Jack Daniels being drunk, a liter a day, quite happily. I was hideously overweight. I was hugely depressed. I was in an ill relationship, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And if you scratch it away, there was that weird kind of visa thing that that happens in the Middle East, where every 3 years and 5 years you lose people. So these people that I was making relationships with were saying goodbye and moving back to their home countries, be it South Africa or Australia or England. So I was like, how do I get a scenario where I can meet like-minded people? And that's all it ever was, like-minded people to talk to and to share some emotive feeling. I've had a bit of a shit day, you know, how are you, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd gone through the rise of Caffeine and Machine. I Love You Man didn't exist until post-COVID. And I sat and watched the movie I Love You Man with my partner, Laura. And we were like, we should absolutely be leaning into this. Like, this is a thing. And we've never really talked about it. And there's a wave of mental health floating around the world at the moment and a wave of people getting involved. And we've never really stood up and said, look, it's part and parcel of our business. It sits at the core of it. You know, this whole get in where you fit in, meet a stranger that becomes a friend, is its mental health support mechanism. So I Love You Man is the first Monday of every month within reason. It's not the easiest thing to pull off because it's quite difficult to, if you imagine the funnel of getting someone to the sofa starts at 10, conversations whittle to 5 pretty quick. To get that one person to commit to come and spend 5 hours of their life on the first Monday of every month, proved in the early days quite tricky.
Yeah.
It's now getting more fluid. It's getting more interesting. When I'm phoning people, they're jumping on it and saying yes. We raise within reason £1,000 a night for charity, and it's the charity of choice of the person that sat on the sofa. It's become a really interesting way of being. Oh, and the core of it is it's unrecorded and unscripted.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to experience it, you need to be there.
And who's the host?
That's a bit weird. It's me, dude.
And it's not on the internet, so I don't know.
No, we don't. It's that secret thing, and it's like the frustrations of other people's Instagrams that we all bear, right? So it's how do you get rid of all of it? And it's like, well, you de-digitize it.
I like that.
Yeah. Look, I'm keen to do an After Dark series. It's something that I'm working to deliver next year. Is how do I give other people the ability to share what they've gone through? And do it in a slightly different manner so that the night itself, I hope to always keep unrecorded.
Yeah.
But the ability to do this prior or post as a follow-up after you've thought about it is something that's super important to me. And it's become important to the entire business. I've actually got it tattooed on my arm. It's become quite a thing, dude. And as a business, we're really proud of what we've achieved with it. So yeah, it's unrecorded, highs, lows, ins and outs of someone's career and life.
Yeah.
And that might be, you know, sitting down with a professional rugby player like George North and talking to him about what it feels like to bear the weight of an entire nation on your shoulders when you go and run out and throw a ball around. To someone like James Walker, who we both know really, really well, who found kind of comfort in a camera and his ability to control his speech impediment.
Yeah.
You know, it's hugely important that people are aware of the ins and the outs of everything because, you know, everyone is a force for good, Sam. Everyone's got a tough gig, no matter what background you are, no matter how much wealth you've got, no matter your upbringing and your scenario, you still have shit moments in life.
Yeah.
And the ability to share it.
And I think there's two factors about it that are so great. Like getting people to not publicly talk about it, but talk about it in front of other people.
Yeah.
It's probably quite a good process for the person that's doing
it's
it.
It's quite cathartic.
And then these are people that generally looked up to by other people who might be going through similar or had similar issues or whatever, like sort of stuff. And you look at it and you go, oh shit, they have problems as well. Like,
yeah. And, you know, we, again, everyone has an opinion about the way that things are done. And, you know, I've had some really wonderful conversations with people that sit within, you know, charitable structures like Calm or
yeah.
And you know, they always just say back to me, just keep doing it, because what you're doing is good enough. You know, you're not here to provide mental health support per se. You're here to just raise the fact that it is good to chit chat and describe and feel and share. Something that came up today, like a problem shared is a problem halved to some extent.
Yeah.
And yeah, you find interesting things, you know, to your point of these aspirational characters. It took me a better part of a year to get him, and timing wise, but a good friend of mine, Magnus Walker, joined. And Magnus is a character, he's an enigma. You see him and you're like, that guy's got shit together. And we had this amazing conversation where he revealed something that I don't think he's ever revealed to anyone. In fact, Hannah, his significant better half, incredibly talented writer for Bloomberg, said that no one's ever heard wow. this before. And the guy has a nightly bath where he sits in a nice warm bath, puts his incense on, turns all the lights off, no music. And that's his moment. Like, he has an hour in the tub. And that's it. That's his ability to reflect, soak, shut everything off, recharge, reboot, get out of the shower, we're off again. And without it, he feels crippled. Like, if he has a scenario where he doesn't have a bath, he's done.
I had him on the podcast a while ago, and he was one of those people that I've seen and sort of on the internet as this like really cool, edgy dude. It's like got a bunch of cool Porsches, kind of seems to have got his shit together. And we did a podcast, and it was quite a long one. And I was like, oh, he's just...
The guy's an opportunist.
He's just a cool dude.
Yeah, and I mean, what was he talking about? He was talking about Buck Smart and, you know, this ability to just sniff stuff out that felt right. And, you know, from sleeping on a bench to being able to restore an incredibly cool kind of century-old house in LA says a lot about his career.
Yeah.
Right place, right time, handled it well. Led by his
gut. And like rolling with it, being like, this is working. Okay, let's...
Yeah, where can we go from here?
Let's get some people to film in this thing. I think this feels like a good part of town, whatever, all that sort of stuff.
And desperately trying to remember that other people's opinions shouldn't really deflect you.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the sentiments we try and push a lot is just because your mate says, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. Like, go with what you feel is right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but other people's influence is a really difficult one to manage.
Negative...
Yeah.
Negative mates is a very difficult... I actually, at the moment, I would say I don't have very many. And I just...
Join the club.
Sort of try not to.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. But, I've got my partner and my son.
But it's difficult.
Doing
things unrecorded.
Yeah.
I really like... It's kind of like, I wish all of my podcasts could not be recorded.
Yeah.
Because then you know that someone would have zero, in theory, zero filter.
There's no inhibition.
Now, whether they do or not, that's their own, where they are in their own journey. I think, but it's also something I think about having putting your headphones on.
Yeah.
I try and get all my guests, generally now, to have headphones on, because it really takes you out of the situation and you just kind of...
Yeah.
I listen significantly more during a conversation like this than I do day-to-day life. I wish I listened more to what people were saying the rest of the time, but because it's like imported into your head, everything else, like, okay, we've got like however many people around and whatever,
I would suggest,
and there's
it
stuff
controls
going on.
ADHD beautifully,
but it just really, like, you tune in and you're quite a lot, it's easier to be present.
Some people have clocked it really fast, especially when we kind of say, you know, phones down. It was something that I noticed recently. Neither of us are doing it, which is ace. When you put your phone on your table, you're intimating that the phone is more important than the person you're sat with, because it's there just in case.
Yeah.
So it's phones down, phones in your pockets, shut everything off, no recording.
Yeah.
And then the guest kind of goes,
yeah.
And you get a moment where
time,
an emotion comes out. We've had some beautiful moments with our guests where there was an emotion release. And it's like, this is really weird. And as the host, I'm sat there going, oh my God, I'm about to cry. and there's like 150 eyes. And I find myself looking like, I look at the guest.
Yeah.
Because if I look right, I'm done.
I think that's one of the benefits of you know, how you set it up and whatnot. But I can see why lots of interviews and stuff, the ones where they're doing it in a big environment with lots of people, where you just have lighting on the two people and kind of try and have everything else dark, because then you're not abundantly aware of, like, oh, I've looked around, there's 1,000 people, oh no, that's no, I just want to talk to this person. let's just roll with it.
Yeah. Thank you for raising it. Like, I Love Your Man's super important, and it doesn't get the airtime because of the way that we do it.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a cool thing. I'll try and come to one at some point.
Yeah, well, maybe you should come and join us.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know whether I've got anything interesting to say.
I bet we could figure something out. You've alluded to half of it straight away, right?
That's all my guests say. I don't think I've got anything interesting. I've picked you for a reason.
Yeah. Low-level friendship circle says everything I need to know.
So I reckon I've got something.
Yeah.
Right. I'm really excited to see what's going to roll in.
Yeah, it's bobbing and flowing already, Hurley. Summer evenings. We missed summer and it's here. Ironically, the week everyone goes back to school.
What's the biggest challenge at the moment with this, or what are you struggling with all of this?
Look, I think the biggest struggle is achieving the high standards I set myself.
Yeah.
Not back to that kind of other people's voices, not being deflected by other people's opinions, because as we've grown, the circle of those that have known us has just amplified as we've gone.
Yeah.
And obviously we're now opening in a whole new area, and there's people that have not really heard about us before.
Yeah.
And their opinions are like 5 years behind the conversation curve. So there's a challenge in terms of bringing everybody to the table about the way we operate, what don't be a dick means, why we're inclusive. Like, people still don't understand why we're inclusive. And we've got a big mural around the corner that says, fat wallet doesn't make you special. But ITBs definitely do. Educating people there is a challenge. I think keeping the culture right internally as we expand is going to be a huge challenge. So we're starting to roll out these kind of fireside chats with me, because my role in the business is going to change commensurately. It's making sure that the team on the ground get it, understand it.
Yeah.
Live by my methodology to some extent. And then I'd say the single biggest challenge is turning it into a proper thing, if that makes any sense. Back to that kind of founder-led, interesting concept. Like, how do you turn it into something that's truly sustainable, where hypothetically in the future we could say, you know, what culture do we want to go and tap? Like, where do we want to pop up? Where do we want to try and make this work? And know that we have the template and the process to make it work. That, I would say, is probably a set of challenges right in front of us.
Yeah. I had a conversation with someone recently, and they sent me I think it's called the Ashbridge model. And it's a way of exploring your sort of purpose and values, and then the strategy around it, and all this sort of stuff. And I found it really, it's what you're talking about. It's like, what are my values? Yeah. What are we aiming for? What are we trying to do? And then, like, looking at, sort of looping back and going, what am I doing right now?
Yeah.
And how does everyone else know? Like, if you've got a team, are they behind this?
Yeah.
Do they feel it? Do they live it?
And I can't just run at 1,000 miles an hour and hope they keep up.
Yeah.
Because it's wrong. And, you know, Matt has been a guiding principle in being able to distill what it is that's in me and push it back downstream so that everyone that walks through the door gets it, feels it. And has that same experience where they don't just kind of go, I have no idea what that was all about. that's a big chonky challenge. But then you kind of, the other challenges are the positive ones. Like, there's two big ones that are right in front of me at the moment that really excite me and scare me in equal measure. One is the ability to do this. I really want to launch a podcast.
Yeah.
And I want it to be community driven. I want the ability to be able to sit with people and draw them in and find out who they are and give everyone that voice, but in a controlled manner. YouTube scares the life out of me, Sam, but I know I need to go and do it.
Yeah.
I know I need to. So my core brands are conversation, inclusion, community, and adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not adventuring, I'm not generating the stimulus to bring back to the yard.
Yeah.
Like, if I don't know what's going on, how can I accommodate the madness that we were just talking about? So I need to adventure, so I may as well take the camera.
Yeah.
And I need to bring it back.
This is interesting, because this is how I feel at the moment. Like, I've done whatever it is, 180 podcasts, and I'm starting to get to the point where I'm like, I'm kind of running out of interest.
Yeah.
And I need, partly because I've got a small child, so he's coming up to 2, and I've just been like taken out of the world for pretty much 2 years, which has been cool.
Yeah.
But then the flip is like, I've not had too many really cool, interesting experiences in the this sort of space in a while. And you're like, I can't, you don't want to become that person that's not in it. You don't want to become the, I'm not a teacher. You're not a teacher in this scenario because you're just trying to get people to talk about their lives and whatnot. But yeah. I'm always conscious that you've got to bring some value. You've got to know what's going on. Like, you don't want to be that lecturer that everyone goes, whether you're a photography person or whatever, like, yeah, but you've not, no one's paid you to take photos in like 30 years. What do you know about the world right now? And you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot that both of us probably right back at our core are photographers, right? That's where it all started for me. I know you're hugely passionate for it too. And
100%.
You know, I love photography because I can freeze time. It's that only ability for me just to go moment frozen. Done. No words, no nothing. It's there, frozen.
Yeah.
And you can hang it, which is beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's core to that adventure. So when I get in a car with Laura and we say, where are we going? Well, let's make a beeline that way. We don't book any hotels. We try our best not to use any form of sat nav.
Nice.
Because it predicates a time of arrival, which puts you under pressure. It puts you under pressure to beat the time.
To keep going, yes.
But it puts you under pressure to sort of say, well, there's my time. That's the only time I'm going to have to enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's all these simple things that we try and do. And, you know, we'll book a hotel as we're rolling into a local area. We never go above 100 euros if we're out on the road. And it challenges you to find yourself in somewhere interesting. And then we go and eat local, talk local, meet local.
Mm.
And with a camera and an interesting car, someone is going to come and talk to you.
Yeah.
It's really weird. And you meet the coolest people.
Yeah.
And it's that, for me, it was the confidence riser, the ability to kind of say, look, that dude over there is alone, but they're there here for the same reason that I'm here.
Yeah.
So let's go and say hi. Or if I'm on the side of the road taking a photo and an old boy leans out the window and says, whoa, what's that Ferrari? And I'm like, it's not a Ferrari, it's a Lotus. And he wants to come and have a chat with you. And then all of a sudden he's regaling stories of, you know, his mum used to drive him to school in an old Lotus Eclat.
Yeah.
And it's layer on layer on layer. But yeah, photography is my deep-seated love and it's powered all of this. So back to that kind of challenge thing is, it's how do I keep taking photos? How do I keep my adventure going? So that I've got something new to add. And then the most fun thing that I never thought I'd ever try and do is make a clothing line.
That's
become a real challenge. Mainly because I don't know what I'm doing. And it's, again, it's that thing that I was brought up to believe in. And it's a bit cliche that when you, and this is not meant in any way arrogant, but when you feel like you're the most intelligent person in the room, leave.
Yeah.
And building this kind of fashion line per se, this clothing brand, has meant that I'm literally the idiot in the room consistently. Yeah. And talking to and working with incredible talent from designers to merchandisers to colorists, it's just been wonderfully fulfilling. And again, learning, because everyone's a different shape and everyone's got a different flavor.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you do it?
How do you do it? Who are you for? What are you trying to make? Yeah, it's one of those things that is always, I think, you know, we always have those things. And 100% clothes. Mm. There's some clothing stuff that I'm like, I don't want to have a clothing line. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I kind of would like to make some clothes.
Yeah.
Mainly because I think there's possibly where, I don't know if this happened for you, it's like, I kind of want to make the clothes that I want to wear, and I don't think people make them, or not really.
It's core, and it's core to it. It's core to my belief. It's like, I can't really find what I want to wear and how I want to present it. And then I've got to get over the fact that I can't deliver it tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is a bit of a walk-in, a descriptive that was used today in a meeting was, it's a hockey stick. Like, we're just going to roll into it and kick out the top. And the cool thing is, all the way along, I can still take photos.
Yeah. Yeah, and it fits in.
I can capture it in the way that I'd like it captured.
It's when you look at, I think one thing which if I did it, I'd be like, okay, but is it also financially feasible? Does anyone else care? You know, okay.
This is a big challenge.
But I love, like, my sort of journey through things or whatever is a photography background, and then it's rolled into making some video, which I don't like making video that much. But like it's kind of part of the thing and whatever, and you got to do it and stuff.
I really love consuming it. I struggle to make it.
I love consuming it. And I realized recently that I love making stuff high quality.
Like I'm a content snob, Sam, and it's dangerous.
And the problem is it doesn't 100% mesh with how the world works at the moment. I think it can, but you have to sort of plant your thing in the stand and go, this is one of the things, because it's definitely clashed. I've clashed with myself by putting out stuff that's like not super high quality in the sort of, let's say, looks department.
Yeah.
Or if I do an interview and I come back and I'm like, shit, that wasn't that good. Or
I'd rather not do it. That's why we're 4 years in and no YouTube channel.
It's tricky, but then at the same time, some point in time, you just have to crack on, don't you?
Yeah.
You just got to do it. And actually, this is the thing I've realized with these conversations, is if I want to do it in the first place, just do it. Get it done. Like I've been an absolute moron and not checked my list today. So we've got some slightly different cameras rolling. We've got a phone camera over there and whatever. But the audio stuff is the same high quality things. And if you don't do it, you don't learn.
Nope.
And you can try and make it better and you can evolve it over time. But that is, you just got to do it.
Don't
you?
Probably take a bit of heed from you, Sam.
I don't know though. It's ever evolving. But I love how all of these things come back around. You're like, you pick up all of these skills.
Yes.
And then they sort of come into this melting pot that is you eventually over time, and you're like, look at a friend or whatever that's doing really well, and you're like, oh, they're really good at this. And you're like, yeah, but they're really good at that because they did this for a really long time. Mm. And this is the culmination of all that stuff.
Yeah. People miss the culmination. They miss the build.
They miss the build because everything's instant, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
it's appeared. It's a
machine. Yeah. Everyone turns up every night.
I mean, it's... It must be...
He just started this place. And
like
happened.
When did it start? Crank and Piston, 2006. Like, this has been in my head and in the plan and in the achievement set since, like, 2006.
And it's...
You know, it's not
it's
an overnighter.
Really cool.
It's just, it's been there. Like, I've wanted to do this for so long, and it just got to a point where I was just like, I have to do it, and then get it wrong every single day.
But that in itself is probably... is why it's going so well. It's because you're like... You are personally driven... And I'm and the team,
to deliver,
and you're employing the right people, or trying to anyway, and then evolving and whatnot, and you're endlessly like I see you all the time. You're like, okay, hey, move that over there, sort this out, blah blah blah.
They hate me
on
for
the
that.
Phone like this.
I need to learn to stop doing that.
Is
undermining is terrible. I ask people to stop me in my tracks. What I need to do now is learn to empower the right people so that they feel empowered.
I need to do this.
Yeah, and this kind of, me going down to ground level and saying something and then it being fed back up to the management and the team. Phil said this to me. It needs to go the other way around.
Yeah.
And look, I'm learning that. I learn it every day. Every day is a school day. It's insane. I upset people. I frustrate people. I make people smile.
But the intention's right.
Yeah.
And you're doing it for the right reason, and you're doing it because you care.
Look, if we were all really bloody good at management, like the world would be a different place, and coaching.
And I feel like management is one of those things that you end up in.
Yeah.
You can choose to go into it, but I'd say that's almost like this is just a different thing.
Yeah.
This is like, I've had a passion, and it's built and built, and now I'm in management.
Yeah. And look, I'm a creative at the core of all of this. And if I'm on my own, or I've left, or I've gone for a wander, like that's because I'm trying to think about how to get my way through it. It's not because I'm detaching.
Yeah.
Nice. Scoops. So they're beginning to flow. Look, R34, MR2 with some tri-spokes on it. Look at that.
I think this is a good time before we start getting, the background starts getting too loud.
Yeah.
So we normally wrap this up with 5 questions.
Go on then, let's have it.
I've hit you with the same, you've had these before, so I'll just do a little
little
skim.
Any deviations?
One car, rest of your life.
Oh, I answered this one for myself the other day, AMG GTR.
Ooh.
I find myself completely in love with them, and I blame Assetto Corsa because it was my de facto race car.
Life is weird. I was talking to someone yesterday about random stuff. We were talking about new SL and new AMG GT.
Yeah.
And it only clocked on me this morning or yesterday that they're basically the same car,
yeah.
But one's the convertible. that seems to be what they've made. They've both got rear seats, they've both got luggage space, but just one has a hard roof, one has not. And I was like, oh, okay. Because I thought they'd made the same car. And then you're like, anyway, I was talking about this and I was like, you know what's a cool car? AMG GTR.
I just think they're wild.
They're really cool.
I like all of them from Gullwings all the way up. But the concept of driving a Gullwing every day scares me.
No, thanks.
And I can't afford it. And SLS...
not for me.
Kind of sexy, but not. A bit frustrating. And then, yeah, AMG GT, I still see it. It's ageless. It's done... It's stood the test of time so well. And how long has it been around? Early teens? 2000s? I find it a really attractive thing. Either that or an S coupe.
Yeah.
You can tell I'm 44
this,
now, can't you?
No, but this is the S coupe is like kind of what I would like this car to be if I didn't. If they made an S class estate, I would have an S class estate right now.
You need buggy space, right?
I need space and stuff, and I've lugged some gear and whatnot and blah 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 blah. But yeah, it's coming. It's coming. That the wafty cruiser.
Yeah, go for it. Embrace it.
And then something, I was chatting to someone about this at an event recently. I'm getting to that point now where I'm like, I want the extremes.
Yeah.
I want the Rolls, but not a Rolls. Like that sort of end, but not a Rolls. And then I want the old and classic and cool and possibly a little bit manic.
Yeah, so if you're going to press me, it would be an S coupe and a 32 Ford hot rod.
Nice. Yeah. This is it. Because you're like, if I'm doing a long journey, I want to be comfy in that. And the rest of the time, I want to be fun, cool, old, whatever. Yeah. Like running on
cross plies and struggling to change gear.
Yeah, and like, you don't have to go fast to have fun.
Nope.
Because like, that is getting old.
Yeah. So yeah, that. I didn't think I'd see myself saying that a couple of years ago, but I feel like I've embraced it.
I think I'm getting to this. I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Most undervalued car at the moment?
Audi A2.
Hmm. They're cool.
Mark 1 TT.
Yeah.
I think there was just a design language. I just think they're tremendously cool cars. And they're undervalued because you can get them for like $2,000, which is just ridiculous.
For something that's got some real ethos and design around its inception.
Yes, that.
Most interesting car to you at the moment?
Most interesting car to me at the moment. I found myself with a resurgent love affair of the Volkswagen Beetle, Sam.
Nice.
It was my first car. I had one when I was 17. I still have the pleasure of one that just hasn't been used for years.
Yeah.
I have a 57 oval window Volkswagen Beetle. And back to that kind of the purity of experience bit that we were just alluding to.
Yeah.
I drove it the other day. I drove it into Stratford. Ran out of fuel because it doesn't have a fuel gauge. It made me smile. Like my cheeks were aching. Entire focus, my Instagram like search feed is just
nice.
Cowlick Volkswagens and hot rods and that.
Cool. Final question.
Yes, sir.
5 car garage.
Right.
Unlimited value. You've got to fit into your life. Blah blah blah.
Copy. So 32 Ford. 250 GT Lusso, debumpered hot rod. If we're going on limited value, I'd really like a Series 1 Range Rover, but let Rob Dickinson go crazy on it.
Yeah.
Like SVR drivetrain, carbon skinned Series 1 Range Rover, but make it look like an Alphaholics so you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
We'll throw that S coupe in there.
Yeah.
And then the 5th car, because I've got this dream to live in a fink somewhere on a Spanish island, like a really gnarly, ratty Suzuki Jimny.
Oh, yeah.
Just something that I can just throw the skateboard and the surfboard in and go to the beach.
Yeah. Did you see the Twisted Jimny?
Yeah. I'm driving it in a couple of weeks. I'm very excited. Nice.
That's just cool, isn't it?
Tractor's back.
Tractor is killing the end of this podcast.
These are amazing, though, to be fair. Quadtracks.
This is a serious bit of kit.
$400,000. Oh, yeah. But we've now got two R35 GTRs that have just rolled in.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Look at that.
That is cool.
So yeah, the Jimny's really interesting. I've had the pleasure of getting to know Charles over the last couple of years.
Yep.
I think I resonate with Charles because I think I've got the same character as him. I'm a bit weird and a bit awkward. And we have these kind of back and forths on WhatsApps, and I rang him up recently and I was like, Twisted Jimny, I really, really want one. And he was so accommodating. And then I freaked out and backed out at the last minute because I knew that we had a lot of expense coming and I just didn't want to put any pressure on myself.
And they only do the you can only get the commercial one.
Yeah, there was some form of legislative reason as to why they sort of stopped it. They probably emissions and something somewhere.
But yeah, I think it is emissions.
The other thing, the other car I really like, and I forget what it's called, it's a useless comment, but it came in last night. The little Honda, it's quite a modern Honda K car. There's just quirkiness in the K car industry. By the way, both those R35 GTRs are driven by ladies.
I saw that.
Yeah. Very cool.
Pretty cool.
It's a rising movement.
It is.
So I'm off to watch the fastest drivers. I call them the fastest drivers in the world. We're off to Santa Pod at the weekend to watch some drag racing. From my side, to close out, I was gobsmacked at both of the people in the finals of Top Fuel, Door Slammers, and Funny Car were all women. And it's a sport that doesn't get the light shone on it to the level.
Yeah,
that
and there's a lot of women in those sports.
Yeah, well, fastest person in Europe is a woman. Fastest person in the States is a woman. And it's a sport that no one looks at. And these things are doing. They're doing standing 1,000 feet in 3 and a tickle at over 300.
Yeah, it's like 0 to 300 in
3 seconds.
3 seconds.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Absolutely mental.
Dominating.
I'd like to go. I want to go to Santa Pod at some point.
Yeah, let's do it.
Right. Thanks very much.
Sam, it's been a pleasure. Coming on the podcast. As always, man.
Cheers.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.